And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Yeah. Goes from like Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I mean all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the border from there into Fort Benning. We now call it Fort Benning, Georgia. And then big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we got plenty on tap for you. We're going to jump right on in. And by the way, a couple of y'all are still saying things like, where did the YouTube go? But sometimes our texter tells us things that people said way after the fact. So I think that's an old text. Mark from Red Bay, I believe, was asking about it.
Yeah, the YouTube is up and running per normal now. So if you want to check it out.
And we're also streaming, by the way, on a variety of platforms. You can find us on Facebook at Sin Phil Williams. That's my account. You can find us on X on my personal account at Sin Phil Williams again. Or the Right Side Media account. You can find us on our website at rightsidemedia.org. You can find us on Rumble. You can find us on YouTube. Good Lord, we're everywhere. All I'm saying is tune in. In fact, I tell you what, if you're not watching the video, you might want to here in a minute because I'm about to show you some pictures of the things I talked about in my monologue. I find them fascinating. It's like history. I'll just go ahead and jump in on that. I'll tell you what, I got some text messages. I'll tell you what, let me do this. Let me get some text messages, and then I'll jump in on that. So give you guys time to get to the video stream if you want to. Go to the video stream. I'm going to show you pictures of the Chilkoot Pass, the Golden Staircase, and of the A.J. Goddard steamship or steamboat that was carried up the mountain. So let me do this first. Bruce from Springville says, the battle cry for our private sector needs to be, quote, push the envelope. We'll be second to none. I agree with that. We had actually had a sermon at church this past weekend. I go to Church of the Highlands, and the pastor's sermon was about how much more God intends. It was not a like get rich kind of sermon. It wasn't like that at all. He was talking about the blessings of the Lord do not stop, and that one of his lines was, "If we don't quit, we win." It's a great line. He said, "I can hear my football coach yelling at me," but that's what God says. So hang on it. JT Lacey Springs says, overreach seems to continue to expand. Example, the $150 charge to hand me my vehicle tag. Yes, totally get it. Totally. Here's the other. The real ID is still bugging the crap out of me. Just saying. I'm still there.
Yeah.
I know. I'm still there.
I mean, it is quite annoying.
It is quite annoying. I mean,
although I had it on mine when I got it, I would be annoyed if I had to go redo it just for that.
I don't know. Something about the fact that I feel like I've proven myself to my government multiple times, and now I got to prove myself again to be allowed to travel inside my own country. Ticks me off. John from Huntsville says, Phil, fantastic monologue. Also, did you hear that Putin announced a 3-day ceasefire in Ukraine starting on May the 8th? By the way, JP, I know you will never say war eagle, but can you give me a war beagle? Just asking.
Not really. I mean, it's too close.
Dave from Capshaw sending us something. What's he got here? Oh, Babylon Bee has a headline. Joe Biden arrested for harboring 11 million illegal aliens. I did see that earlier. Babylon Bee, who writes their stuff, man? It's priceless. TC from Priceville says, I think the reason the left does not care about the private sector or small businesses is because they don't need them. They figured out a long time ago they can just use the Federal Reserve to print all the money they want, and they can care less that the American taxpayers are on the hook to pay for it. Just my 2 cents. Well, I don't think you're too far off on some of them, TC. Now, of course, that doesn't negate the fact that one of the mantras you constantly hear is they need to pay their fair share, but they'll never say what fair is. It's just more. Fair is just more, please, more. And then David from Huntsville says the left is often seen as being the more compassionate, but statistically, conservatives give more charity than those on the left. That's true, by the way. Said conservatives also volunteer more, but it's not because the people on the left don't care as much. It's because a person on the left sees these things as primarily government's role to do. Perfectly said. He said, a person on the right believes it's in the individual, the neighbor, the church, the charities, or the community's responsibility to do things. Government is the least efficient way to provide help. Wow, you guys, I'm telling you, half this audience could just host this show for me. I swear, it's just true. Now, look, I'm going to run through, so Dipper number one, and JP, I'll be calling up those photographs here momentarily. If you're watching on the live stream, I'm about to show you a couple of things that to me are just inspiring. And they're old, old, old photographs from 1898. But listen, there are times when government needs to quit sending business elsewhere and making it hard to be in business. There's times when government needs to realize that they can actually level a playing field as opposed to create the playing field. There's times when government doesn't even do its own job, which makes it hard for people to be in business. There's times when government forces an agenda to try to co-opt the market forces and get the agenda in front of the actual private sector. And then there's times when government overregulates to the point that the private sector is crushed or feels no need to be in business anymore. I'll talk about all those things in a minute, but let me do this. If you heard my monologue a moment ago, I talked about the gold rush of 1896 through 98-ish in Alaska. And y'all, when I say the Chilkoot Pass was rough, I didn't have the time to do it justice in my monologue. But the Chilkoot Trail was anywhere between 28 and 30 miles on the average, and it was arduous, and it was so rough in some places that they just basically they stopped taking pack mules because in the end, the animals were often destroyed. They'd break their legs, and things would happen to them. They wind up getting eaten. So they just decided to, basically it became a man's job to carry his gear or to pay somebody to pack it for him. There was no other way to do it. You couldn't drag it. You couldn't put it in a wagon. You couldn't haul it on mules. And then you get, after all of this, and there were stages, like you'd go to this certain place, and you'd have a resting spot. And then there are stages after that, and you go to another place, and a resting spot. And we're talking about not just like it's your turn on the trail, you might see somebody. We're talking about a line of people. It looks like, if you look at the pictures I'll show you in a minute, it looks like literally people going up an escalator at a department store. There's so many. And we're talking about 1,500 steps finally were cut by some entrepreneur into the side of what became known as the Chilkoot Pass. And the Chilkoot Pass, at some places, was at a 45-degree angle. And it went up for almost a mile. It raised, I want to say, like 2,500 feet during that mile. It was epic. And there were people whose entire effort to get to the gold fields failed right there on the Chilkoot Pass. But then they get to the top. And then they're in the high mountains. And the Yukon River is in the high mountains, and the Yukon River was what they had to sail to get down to Dawson, which were closer to Dawson where the actual gold fields were. And some entrepreneur, a guy named Goddard from Seattle, thought, you know what? I'll fix this. And he had two small steamboats made, the kind that had the stern wheel, the big paddle wheel on the back. And these weren't big. They're like the size, I want to say they were about 20 feet long when they were built, and roughly about 10 feet wide. And they could haul like 10 men plus their gear. But he had the boats built, boilers and all, and then disassembled, and then shipped up to Skagway Port in Alaska, and then hauled bit by bit, board by board, boiler by boiler, up through the mountain passes, and then put them back together up on the high mountain lakes. And it worked. This entrepreneurship didn't just make those people a lot of money cutting steps or building boats. This entrepreneurship was literally what made the gold fields more efficient and, for that matter, safer. You got these pictures? Let's do this. Let's do the Golden Staircase picture first. If you're watching the YouTube right now, I'm putting a picture up on the screen. And when it comes up, I'll just tell you what you're seeing is, and I got a slight delay on the one that I'm watching on my screen, but when you see the picture, what you're looking at is a long line of men that if you saw the entire picture, what you would probably see is literally hundreds, maybe 1,000 men going just, back to back to back up the mountain pass. Is that picture up yet? I can't even see it on my screen yet, so I'm just talking to it. This picture, there it is. This picture, yeah, that one, okay, you got the right one. That's a great picture there. That's probably 1,000 men walking one after the other up the Golden Staircase through the Chilkoot Pass. And you can see how steep it gets there at the end. You see that thing, man? Can you imagine? There were times it says that when the snow melted, that the people were actually having to go up the hill on their hands and knees because it was so steep. Unbelievable. And they're carrying, every time they went, they were carrying packs of 80 to 100 pounds or more. And then sometimes they paid these like Sherpa guides, but they were Native Americans in the area to carry for them. But you had to have the money to do that. And you would get up there, and the Canadian government had a mandate, which was a good mandate, had a mandate that every man had to have at least 1,500 pounds of gear. And so what that meant was you were going to make this trip 15 times on the average, just to get your gear up. And they had a place up there called the scales where they would weigh it, and they would see what you were bringing. And then they would tell you that you did or did not have enough, and you would have a place where you could stow your gear until you got it all together, and then you had to find a way to get it forward from there. So there's the golden staircase. How crazy is that? And then show the next picture. The next picture is going to come up on the screen. This is, so A.B. Goddard.
Just one second, let me pull it up real quick.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking. Just, go do your thing, man. A guy named A.B. Goddard from Seattle. I'm fascinated by history, but this is a great story, too. It's entrepreneurship. It's private sector work at its best. A.B. Goddard was an entrepreneur in Seattle who heard about the gold rush. And his thought was not, hey, let me go get some gold. His thought was, I'm going to make a lot of money by helping the other people get gold. And so he took these two boats, he had them built and he took them apart and literally packed them up into the mountains and put them back together. Y'all, that's on top of the 1,500 pounds he had to have to get up there. There it is. He named his first boat after himself. It's the A.B. Goddard. And you can see a picture of it on the screen right now. And the A.B. Goddard plied those waters. And listen, when it went up and down the rivers, sometimes it was calm water. Sometimes they had to shoot rapids. Other times it was going around shoals and sandbars and dodging ice flows. And it actually sank. The A.B. Goddard and its sister ship both sailed the waters for 2 to 3 years. The gold rush only lasted about 2 years. And when the A.B. Goddard sank in 1901, it was found in 2008. They actually found it with a lot of historical artifacts still on it. The boiler still intact underwater. And it became an archaeological spot as they pulled it up. That's 1898 right there. Can you imagine what it took to carry that thing up the mountain? I mean, in pieces, but still.
That is true entrepreneurship right there, though, it's crazy. Like you said.
It's crazy. That's America right there, man. I'm just telling you. That's America. All right. Listen, we're taking a break right now. We're going to come back. And in that theme, I'm going to dive right into private sector versus public sector. Yeah, I got a few more things to tell you. Things in the news. Things you're going to want to know about this very thing. What happens when government just gets out of the way, please? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.